You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Neil Williams. Neil.
Good afternoon.
We have to get the music, so remind me on that.
Yeah, I know. You like this? Needs to happen is I need to do what I said I was going to do.
No, it's okay, man. We've had to do a lot recently, and you definitely get a pass, and I wouldn't have known had I not heard the great music that Ronan published for us over the years since, what, 2014. But that's good music.
But we have an update.
I think we have something a little better. So, a little more in line with our personalities.
Yes.
Et cetera.
Well said.
Such as that is. Just like that.
Speaking of birthdays.
Oh, yeah, right. I turn, the big 5'8", I think, this coming Friday. So thank you, everybody, for another year.
We've got to have some appropriate background music. Tells everybody how cool of a 58-year-old you are.
I think I still have hair, and then my haters say I have bald spots here, and I don't. I have hair. It's just I have a high hairline, so I don't know.
Half empty or half full?
They're half full. They're negative people. I'm proud of my hair that I have. I don't have, anyway.
It's not about where you're from. It's where you are.
That's right. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And we go on and on from there. So thanks for those pre-game wishes. Speaking of, sorry to hear about the Kansas City Chiefs.
Our dear friend.
Game. All the conspiracy theorists are saying that the NFL commissioner walked into the locker room and told the Chiefs they had to lose the game.
Wait, hold on. Where'd you hear this?
I can't disclose my source. Like, man, I could tell by the look of Mahomes coming down the tunnel. He was given a message to throw. They were told to throw the game.
Patrick Mahomes is from Big Spring, Texas. Like, he is a small town family. He's a good dude. Come on.
Man, it's like with the election or anything else. You know, denial is a defense mechanism that God gives us so that we can accept things that are too painful to handle. Trump losing and the Chiefs losing have really, I think, sent some people over the edge. So, and I understand, but I'm not.
You don't have to like it, but you have to live with it.
You do. You have to accept it. That's that last part of the grief process is acceptance. Mm-hmm.
Taking a loss is never fun, but rewards from learning how to do that correctly are pretty awesome.
Yes, there are rewards.
Indeed.
Or at least it gets you more serene, closer to serenity, something, right? Because you're not – anyway. But you know what?
It's a huge opportunity.
Yeah, it's a segue in today's exercise. We're going to talk about attitude. And attitude is everything. And in recovery and in therapy and treatment and coaching and counseling, attitude is what mediates our behavior, right? Mm-hmm. You have a good attitude. You have a bad attitude. But we're going to talk about the first part of the show today. We'll see how far we get. I want to break down component parts of an attitude. And then once we go through the component parts of attitude, it's like personality is a construct, attitude is a construct. So once we kind of go through the fundamentals of what an attitude is comprised of, then we'll move into a practical application and an attitude next week.
Okay.
It's very cognitive behavior in nature, and I love it, and I would do this work all the time in the prison system.
Your light's in the camera.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you can actually see it.
Oh, wow. How's that? So anyway, let's talk about attitude. So Let's first talk about the three components that are very utilized, almost overutilized, in the 12-step program. Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and others. Mm-hmm. And so the first of the three would be honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard that, Neil?
Yeah. But, I mean, I know why. Like, I get it. You know, you have to kind of hammer those. You have to drive them into just your way of thinking. And those three things are the very three that most, and again, I'm speaking for myself, but I also have met countless individuals who are a lot like me in these rooms. Open-mindedness, willingness, and honesty are three things that you do not want to do when you're in your addiction. Like, you're not open to hearing any suggestions. You don't want to tell people what you're doing, and you're not willing to do anything but your way. You know, so it's, yeah, it goes against what you've, you know, become so accustomed to doing every day. Okay. So, but you can't change unless you do those three things, or at least you can't have long-term change.
Okay. So you can white knuckle it for a while. You can be abstinent for a while. Drug-free, et cetera, for a while.
Because we're master manipulators too. Mm-hmm.
So
I can fake it.
Sure.
For a while.
So honesty. So let's talk about the first part of that how method, if you will, but the honesty piece of being honest. Being honest. Being sincere. Being honest with yourself, being honest with others. Don't deceive yourself. Don't deceive others. Be honest. So tell me some of your thoughts on honesty and how that plays in or how that's played in for your program or your work.
I think it's really easy to say you're being honest if you're being honest with other people. But if you're still being dishonest with yourself, you know, it's not honest is both. Like I cannot say I'm being an honest person if I'm living in a lie to myself, but open with it towards other people, you know. And I didn't know that for a long time. I just didn't know that. The way I saw it was, as long as I'm not going around lying to everybody, then I'm being honest. But you know, what lies am I selling myself? And there's a lot of, you know, that's how I end up in a tough spot, is I tell myself something's okay, make exceptions, little exceptions. And like, well, I'm doing it because of this. That's what I think of immediately is the definition for the term honest in my life today is different than what it used to be. And that's the difference, the being honest with myself and others.
All right. Both concurrently at the same time.
Right.
Right. And so we can get tricked up into thinking as long as we're honest with others, we're good. And then, and again, this would be an exercise. This could be an exercise right here. It's like, okay, you know, are you more honest with yourself or others? Someone's going to have that imbalance. And then it's usually going to be, well, I'm more honest with others. Okay. Disclose ways how you're dishonest with others, and then also disclose ways or write down ways that you're dishonest with yourself. Kind of get that out. Get that on paper, you know. I mean, it's kind of funny. You know, my weight had crept up 25 pounds heavier than I am now, regardless of how bad I was the last two or three days. Anyway, but now I was able to do, well, it's not so bad. No, you know, I wasn't being honest with myself, man. Then the clothes wouldn't fit. And then I had to get honest with myself.
That's the worst. When you go to put on that favorite shirt, favorite pair of pants.
Yeah, I was left with basketball shorts and a Dallas Cowboy jersey that was like insanely
elastic only.
and one hood, whatever, and
one. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Whatever shows will, whatever clothes will show you some mercy.
I'd be honest with myself, man. That's it. You know, throwing the white flag. I'm in denial, and I've been just deceiving myself on this issue. Much, you know, and I know there's others too. So honesty. Anything else we want to talk about on honesty?
Yeah, one thing I also want to say is that what I see a lot of, and I don't know, I did a lot of this too, lying by omission. Mm. Like, honesty is also disclosing what needs to be disclosed. And I think a lot of people, you can work your way around that. Well, it's a need-to-know basis, right? Stuff like that. I'm not saying that's not true sometimes, but it's easy to use it as an excuse.
Right.
That's it.
And another thing is everybody lies. I just don't think to some extent or another, I think everybody's dishonest at some degree or another. Okay. It's almost like somebody says they're sin free or something like, nope. Mm-hmm. At a minimum for those people, there's always their thought life. The honesty is something, you know, that is definitely a core part of that, and unpackaging in this attitude exercise. And, you know, one of the first things we talk about in relationships is if you have trust, you have nothing. And there you go. Trust is a form, I think, of operational honesty, you know, showing that trust, earning that trust, mm-hmm. remaining in that trust. And that even, you know, that goes beyond faith or what have you. Luckily, so my computer's already low on battery. I can't believe it. So
you don't plug it in?
Yeah, I'm going to have to shift gears a little bit to another zone.
I stay plugged in, Bruce.
I know, man.
Electrically, spiritually, I'm plugged all the way in.
Whew, that was a close call. Anyway, let me see this. That's not good. All right, then.
You're basically teaching a class today. You can't disappear.
I know. I can't disappear. See ya. All right. So next, it's being open-minded. Mm-hmm. So there's closed-mindedness. There's cognitive rigidity. So the closed-minded person is not open to new things, right?
Right.
They want to do it their way. And sometimes they even know their way is an absolute failure and they still don't want to do it another way because they're so accustomed and so comfortable with doing it their way, right? Uh-huh. It's like the enemy you know is better than the enemy you don't know.
Yeah.
You know they're the enemy and it doesn't make sense, but that none of this makes sense in addiction or compulsive behavior or dysfunction. So open, you know, being open-minded, and I think we're going to be, it was interesting, you know, working in prison where guys had done 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and they kind of got brought to their knees, and they said, you know what, yeah, maybe I should be more open-minded about some other ways to think and respond in my morals, values, beliefs, and actions, but mm-hmm. we're about ready to go on to into a situation where, okay, these folks had to go into treatment. Now they're kind of out of treatment, supposedly, and into a transitional sober living environment. So some of these people may or may not be kind of ready to be open-minded. Like they were open-minded enough to go to treatment because I didn't want to lose my job or my wife or my kids or whatever, but are they really open-minded to all this other stuff that I think we're going to be talking about? So interesting.
Not only that, but we are meeting them at a very interesting time in their life because they're getting some control back. And when you're just now getting more control of your life and then someone's like, oh, hey, we're going to do it this way also. And then you're like, whoa. You know, so naturally, I think it's instinct to be a little defensive and let someone take the wheel again.
Right.
And now it's another new person, new group of people who want to help me. And, you know, so you're right.
That's right. And that's why we have that kind of 7 to 14 day observation period, even in a sober living environment. to where we gradually infuse some of those elements, going from a institutional mindset or an inpatient mindset or a controlled environment mindset to a little bit lesser controlled environment mindset, and see what the, it's almost like training wheels, right? You take the training wheels when the person can balance the bicycle, right? So we're in that kind of training wheels post-treatment zone with where they're doing. And so, yeah, open-mindedness to new strategies, open-mindedness to new ways of thinking, open-mindedness to healing, open-mindedness to taking more responsibility for things, open-mindedness to be transparent versus guarded. And I know that takes trust and an alliance between the coach and the mentor and the person. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
It's not just letting go, but to whom, to what, mm-hmm. you know, that changes everything.
Right. And so I think, you know, between the three of us, you know, that the clients, guests, or whomever have a variety of person to respond to.
Right. So. Yeah. We are in three unbelievably unique ways, just not at all the same.
Well, we have good hearts. We're professionally trained. We're human beings. We breathe air. I should have made that very clear.
It's just funny to think about how the three of us came together.
Yeah. So it's just, you bet. So open-mindedness. And then the next one of our Trinity and the 12-step Trinity is willingness. Willingness. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Man, that's such a interesting word. You know, yeah. It's like trying to pick up something or
I want to read the Webster's definition. Okay.
Please.
Because this is translations and more definitions. The quality or state of being prepared to do something. Readiness. That's good.
It's really good.
The quality or state of being prepared to do something. I really like how they word that. I guess that's why it's a dictionary.
Versus a dictionary. All right. Anyway. Woo! haven't lost.
If anybody forgot how old he was turning this week, that's your reminder right there. Thanks, Dad.
Woo. All right.
Oh, man. That was a therapist and a dad joke together. Oh, my gosh.
There I am. See?
Knocking it out of the park.
You and Sherrod are going to have all the cases. I'll just be the administration guy in the back.
With
the
dad. That's pretty solid entertainment.
Honestly, no pun there either, but with the willingness, you know, what – that state of readiness to do something.
Yeah.
Spot on. And so with these types of clients, what are you ready to do? Like, where's your head at right now? Like, mm-hmm. You're here. You've come this far. What was it that you think you were ready to do now? Like, what was in your head? I mean, that's a fair question to anybody, right?
Yeah. And because the other thing they say in that definition is the quality of. So you're prepared, but how prepared? And at what level, you know, to what extent? That's cool.
Yeah, because
there's really a lot more to it.
Yeah, well, look, my treatment plan said I had to go through treatment, be discharged, and go through a period of sober living before I could be really complete with this phase of treatment. Okay. So what does that mean? You know, is a person just checking boxes, faking it till they make it, or they're willing to really dig in, you know, dig in and do some work so that, you know, are you willing? And, I guess, you know, you can tell me about some of your sponsees that you've had to, I'm sure you've had to tune up or tone up somebody on the willingness side that you were working with.
Well, yeah. Because there's always exceptions. We always want to make exceptions, meaning I'm willing to meet with you and I'm willing to talk about this stuff and I'm willing to go to one meeting a week. Okay, well, another part of this program is that, you know, you make some amends later on. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you get to a place, or even before you make the amends, there's a forgiveness area. And so you're talking about, you're discussing your resentments. And, okay, I'm willing to work this program, meet with my sponsee, stay sober, and do these things, but I'm not forgiving that dude. Absolutely not. My mom, blah, blah, blah.
Whomever. Yeah.
Whoever, right. Insert person here. And then even the amends. So, yeah, your willingness, because right there again, the quality of your how prepared you are. So I'm willing to do this, but not that. Well, that's not being willing. That's still hanging on to that control.
And everybody's in the same boat. When I said nobody's completely honest, not everybody's completely willing either, because they're always holding back something.
Yeah. And that's specifically do not hang on to anything, because if you do, you're asking for problems. God knows when, but they're coming, and that's where they'll be, right, in whatever you held on to.
Okay. So we have honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And man, those are just really, all three of those are cornerstones to recovery and healing, but also cornerstones to, you know, responsible living.
Yeah. I was about to say, outside of that, it's a healthy mindset.
Yeah, it is. And so the thing that's the challenge, you know, today or soon, like what we're going to cover is 3, 6, 8 stepping stones. Look, that's hard to juggle. That's hard for people to, me or anybody else, to kind of juggle these things. Some of these come more naturally than others. All right, then. And you may want to get your Webster out again. The next one I want to go over is responsibility. Okay. Well, this fits right in with open-mindedness.
Oh, gosh.
You want to read it or you want me to keep talking?
Yeah, no, I'll read it real quick. The state or fact of having a duty to deal with something or of having control over someone. I'll read that again.
Yeah, read that again.
The state or fact of having a duty to deal with something or of having control over someone. So responsibility to something or someone.
Okay. Whew, we could do a whole show on this, man.
Oh, yeah.
Man, look. At the first pass, it's taking responsibility. So taking responsibility is at least owning, being responsible, but owning your actions, owning your actions, owning your feelings, owning your beliefs. Okay. I'm responsible for that. Okay. I'm responsible for how I think and feel. Now we have actions. You know, the person takes the victim stance. It's not my fault. It's the PO's fault. It's my ex's fault.
Yeah.
It's my family of origin's fault. You know, I'd get that all the time in prison, man. Like, oh, you don't understand. I had to grow up in this neighborhood and do whatever I could by any means necessary to survive and bliss and that. And therefore it put me in the wrong place at the wrong time. And now I'm here in this prison, this and that. And I'm like, wait a minute. What about all the other people who are in the same situation as you or worse and didn't go to prison? Where's their voice? What's the, you know? So again, and that blame game or whatever. So taking responsibility in that aspect is crucial, because if you can't take responsibility for things, you can't grow, you can't heal.
Okay? And therein lies a secondary problem is, okay, responsibility, I understand what it is, but who deems me responsible of this and that? You know, who says I'm responsible? No, I'm responsible for this, but the way I was treated, the way I was raised, no, I'm not responsible for that. So I can act this way because they made me this. You know what I'm saying? Then you have people who, again, more exceptions is I'm responsible of what I say I am. And it doesn't work that way either.
And you're responsible about how you responded to your situation. You were there. And so you are partly responsible, you know? Right. In prison, if two guys get into a fight and they're both slugging it out, regardless of who started it, they get the same punishment. It's called a fight. Thank you very much. I'm going to distinguish that. If two guys get in a scuffle and one guy hits the other and the other guy falls over dead and doesn't respond, that's an assault.
Right. Right. But action by both parties.
So, yeah, but both parties had some role in it, you know. I mean, now, right. One more so than the other on the fight, for sure. But, okay, so that we have taken responsibility for things. But being responsible, I like the idea of being responsible because some people, they're not responsible. They're late. They'd be late to their own funeral. They're so irresponsible, right?
Yeah.
They're irresponsible with their money. They get money in their pocket and they blow it on dope or clothes or whatever, and they're irresponsible with their money. Okay?
Right.
They don't handle their obligations either at work or school or as a parent. You know, they abdicate those for whims in the moment, right? They're being irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, what a triple, quadruple-edged sword. Responsibility.
Responsible to me is tending to or taking care of all of the things that are affected by my behavior, that, you know, the timeliness and being a good steward of my finances, all that stuff, my behavior, my responses to situations, and because those things are impacted by what decisions I make. So I need to take care and tend to those things and make sure they're appropriate in the way they need to be. Should be.
Because, right, you're the person responsible. So I had a job, and I still do, I guess. And I'm responsible for several people in a way or whatever, their duties, and I'm the person in charge. I'm responsible. I'm the one responsible. I'm the one who's held accountable.
Right? Believe it or not, there's freedom in that, too. A lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of freedom in taking ownership and being responsible for all that you're involved.
Yeah, because you know what? I have a better chance of controlling me than I do you. There's no way I'm going to control you. But no. I can control myself a little bit better by through rational analysis or the program or whatever and say, wait a minute, this is stinking thinking, or I need to do this, or I'm in denial. Oops, I'm doing the victim stance. Oh, I'm being overly optimistic or whatever the thinking area is. I have free will to make that change.
Mm-hmm.
I can't change you.
No, right.
Can't change.
And if you're what if you relied on me to pay your mortgage? You know,
and then I'm even stressed out all the time.
Right, because you're just. What if I forget? You exactly. Can't do anything about it.
And I'm screwed. So yeah. I'm going to stress on that because I'm the victim, not the victim, but you know what I mean. And yep. I can't get this done because I'm totally dependent on Neil to get all this stuff done, I'm just sitting here, and he's the one that's really no. You so yeah, the more responsibility that we can do on our own and possess and take charge of on our own, the better. Okay, and we know the line, we know the boundary where you end and the other person begins, where you end and
it's pretty entertaining when people pretend like they don't know.
Government begins.
You know.
Where you end and the law begins.
That's kind of scary. I don't like those words. It's true. Yeah,
hard facts, man. Hard.
Oh, that's that opens up a whole other issue of where should it end and where should the law begin, but we're not doing that today.
Exactly. That's another show, right? So the next one is humility. So if you want to get your humility. So humility is the opposite of grandiosity, right? Opposite of narcissism. It's the big word today. Everybody's a narcissist.
I knew they were going to have humble as a synonym, but I didn't think. Definition says a modest, so humility is a modest or low view of one's own importance. Humbleness. Interesting way to put it. Okay. I don't like the low point of view. No. I know what it's saying, but I think that could be misinterpreted as viewing yourself as less than, and that's not what it's saying.
Sometimes I get back in my earlier training, I'd work with kids, and I'd ask a three-year-old, why do you think the sun rose today? Because I woke up. The sun rose for me.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And it's so cute, right? I mean, yeah. It's kind of bad when the person's 35 or whatever. But if you have this three-year-old, like, yeah, because I wanted it to, because I'm awake and the sun is
willed it.
And that kid is really overinflating.
Right.
Overinflating their sense of importance.
Yeah.
It's all about me, man.
Yeah.
It's all about me and my needs, my wants, my wishes, mm-hmm. my desires. And we think, surely people couldn't fall into that trap. Ooh, yes, they do.
Right.
Particularly people of means.
Right.
And I've been in the people of means business here since 2014, close range. And you give somebody with some means, financial, et cetera, and a good bit of power and control. That's a dangerous combination, man.
Yeah. And you're throw a wrench in the spokes by saying no. You know, it's like, excuse me? Did you say no?
And then the next
thing, I can't?
Yeah. Exactly. And the next thing you know, they get punch drunk with power and over self-importance, almost a grandiose sense of self-importance. Mm-hmm. And they almost turn into that three-year-old. I promise you not, man. I ran into a guy who almost thought he was God himself. I mean, I was stupefied. I almost pulled out, why does the sun rise because of you, man? And he, you could see him go, well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it was just that self-consumed. And look, man, that's not to point a finger at people. It just shows you how people can get into a corner that's so dysfunctional and so crazy that they just have to come to the end of themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. You don't talk that person down like, oh, you know, really, you should be a little bit more humble. Usually these people, men have to fall.
Yeah.
And we don't want that. I don't want that, man. I'd love to be able to talk to you and talk some sense into you. You know, I remember, you know, the lack of humility on some of these executives or what I call some of these firms, they were equity partners. So they're bulletproof. It's hard to fire a partner. It really is, especially an equity partner. It costs millions. Depending on the firm they're with,
mm-hmm.
they're almost bulletproof, right? And so, and that just gave them more ammunition and more bandwidth to overinflate their importance.
Yeah. And then, because sometimes they'll even make decisions just having that knowledge that they normally would not make.
Yeah. I would say crazy stuff in my 30s, man. You know, I get tested and, are you kidding me? I work for the Justice Department and I'm keeping your life safe and I do this special man, blah, blah, blah. Man, I would just say stuff because I was defensive. And it was just, I look back on it now, it's laughable, right? But I actually, since somebody put me in a vulnerable spot, you know, I would lash out at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would cling onto something that was comfortable for me or showed self-efficacy for me.
Right.
Almost like, yeah, can you put four plates on a side?
Right.
Get that up?
Yeah.
Hell no. You can't. Yeah. but you could come at me with that. Okay, Mr. Strong, like you think you can.
Yeah, I need that sense of superiority. I need it now. Right. I've got to reach for something.
So that humility, whew, that's good.
My experience was, it crept up on me, yet I'm alluding to sense of importance, because I wasn't necessarily thinking nobody else is important. However, my lifestyle and my actions showed that nobody else mattered. And so here I was living in a way that was impacting all these people around me negatively. And it wasn't that I didn't care about anyone. It was just simply that I cared about me and what I wanted so much that I had completely stopped caring about anybody else. You see what I mean? And so it really crept in through my behavior. And then I realized I have zero humility, and I could care less about anybody but myself and what I want.
Right.
And that's a scary thing, man.
It is. It takes people a process to be able to get to the point to look at that. Or it takes folks like us and our station now, me, you, and Sherrod, to tell people, okay, let's take a look at this right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are some of the more successful days when I'm able to see somebody come down just through a conversation. And they can actually grasp it and they recognize it for the first time. Those are big accomplishments, and I love those days.
Yeah, but like you said, that overestimating of our importance and really yeah. placing strategic challenges to that is really good to see where it is. Now look, I can see somebody who has had such a trauma background that they cut people off for their own emotional safety and survival. And then by default, they became self-centered.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Say it again, though.
I know. Let me see if I can get this right. Somebody's gone through so much trauma, physical, sexual trauma, been put upon them by another third party or third parties that they kind of shut down. And they shut down and then start not caring about other people. And then they're just there out of survival. So they're being selfish because all they're thinking about is themselves, but the twist is, oh, I'm doing this so I'm not going to be victimized, or I'm in a vulnerable. So I don't put myself in a vulnerable spot that I'm taking advantage of. And we see this a lot more with our lady, you know, client, you know, ladies and whatnot. But we do see it. I mean, we do see that in men. I do see that in men. And so that's an interesting. It's a selfish position, but it was born out of a different process, and it has a different flavor than just the kind of the straight mainline narcissist or pseudo psychopath. That's just absolutely, you know, those guys, the narcissist or the pseudo or the psychopathic person, you know, is more sensation seeking, thrill seeking, and is not depressed in any way, shape or form. Whereas the other people are depressed and anxious and are averting a traumatogenic, you know, thinking and response style. So, but you know, that's why we get to know people before we start to judge them, you know, and
right.
I always like the guy in the meeting, man, who hauls off to some dude, you need to do a four step.
Yeah. The classic, that's when you pull out the classic work your own program. I used to laugh. I loved it because, you know, I was in the treatment center weekly, like a couple times a week inside. I was real close with those guys, and it would always crack me up when we're in the middle of a meeting and two guys have clearly been fighting all day, maybe even all week, and they're just eyeing each other. I'm like, wow. So, and somebody just, work your own effing program. And they just
right.
lose it, dude. I love it.
Yeah, I had a thing at my church, 1953, and a couple of old school guys, and this one guy, I think he was the instructor of the Bible class, and he always had a runny nose, he had bad allergies. And this other old guy in the group says, if you'd get rid of that sin problem, maybe your nose wouldn't run so much.
In the middle of Sunday school?
Yeah. Blow, just get rid of that sin problem.
That's pretty funny.
Talk about work your own program. Holy smokes.
Nothing like an old-fashioned Sunday school throwdown. Oh,
I was homicidal when that dude said that. I don't care. I just jumped up out of my chair and dropped some F-bombs right there, baby. Got sent to the principal's office, Tommy Teague's office, the whole nine yards, man. Anyway, told that guy where he could go with that.
That's the best.
Man, you know what? I brought the prison to the Sunday school. You know what I'm saying? Bring it to you, man. You just got rid of that sin problem. Your nose would probably stop running.
Dang, dude, that's
funny. You believe it. Crazy. Oh, sorry, man. But you know what that is? That's a lack of humility. That, like, he's God's man.
Right.
Thinking
you'll bring things back to order with your will.
We got to talk about something else. I'm about ready to get worked up.
Let's move. Let's move on.
Oh. See, I'm already traumatic. That was a traumatic memory, Neil. All right.
We'll work through it later.
All right. Next on our list, as we ascend through the ranking of parts of a good attitude and responsible living, third from the top is caring. And Neil, let's kind of get back what you were saying. You had gotten to a point where, what'd you say? It's not that I didn't care about anybody. It's just that
I was so focused on what I cared about that there was no energy or time left for anybody else's cares or concerns. And I was consumed by mine in such a big way that it wasn't that I directly chose not to care, but that was a byproduct. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't set out to say, screw all of you guys, I only matter. But it sure did look that way, you know?
Or we set up reasons to justify why we're not caring.
Elaborate, please.
I'm too busy. I worked 60 hours this week. Hey, why didn't you go to the kids' football game?
Yeah.
Because if I don't work and make this money, the kid can't go to the football game. That type of thing, right?
You know, that's real, though. Yeah. I'm guilty of that. I get consumed with what I'm working on, and other things go to the wayside, and I've got to redirect. You know, I think that happens to a lot of people who are passionate about what they do, you can lose sight.
So that caring is two things. It's maybe how you feel or how you think, but it's also your actions. This is a hard one, man, and it gets lost in the shovel every time. How do you show that you care?
Time.
I mean, quantity time is better than, you know, I'd get I just spend quality time with my kids. No, bro, it's quantity time.
Yeah.
Caring. How do you show that caring or compassion? But they just, in the word caring, how do you show that to others? To whom do you show that to? Your spouse, your family, loved ones, close friends, coworkers. Who do you show this caring to? Who do you care about? How do you show it? You know, because that, for some of you folks, it's very selective, right? I only care about a few people.
Because I get something from those people. I get something back. So really, do I care about them or do I care what I'm getting?
And that's not what this exercise says. Are you a caring person?
Yeah. So
that kind of that's a whole lot more than one or two people or my close associates or one of the people I trust, right? Because I get loyalty from them, or I get this or that from this other person. So,
I read something recently that talked about. I think it was talking about giving. Or helping, and it said it really doesn't truly matter until giving or caring is inconvenient for you and you still do it. That's when you can actually show that you do give a damn. so to speak. Because if it's always convenient for me, then really what I'm not making any sacrifice, you know, and ultimately a sacrifice determines that I truly care, making that sacrifice.
Right. When you go and it starts to hurt a little bit, and even with tithe and offering, you're giving more than what's comfortable to give. With caring, giving more than what's comfortable to give. That's a great point, you know, and that really shows that you care. And so again, that's a whole hour or two class right there, you know, just operationally defining these terms. We only have we only have 3 minutes left. Objectivity, being objective is very important as part of attitude development and maintaining a positive and healthy attitude. When we say be objective, try to get your feelings out of it, okay? If you're just so spun out on your feelings about something, you're being very subjective. Remember our road rage thing? That lady had it out for me. She's a South Bay driver or whatever. It's like, wow, man, really? Like, is that really objective right there? No. Right. So, you know, being as objective as possible. Nobody's going to be 100% objective. But knowing that you want to stick to the facts, stick to the reality of things as much as you can will help you with a positive attitude. Any thoughts on objectivity?
Yeah, I just remember the importance we discussed last week of making decisions based on facts, not feelings. You know, living that way is going to get you nowhere good.
Exactly. And the last one is gratitude. We have 2 minutes and we can always come back to this next week, Neil, and talk about gratitude. You could, such a cornerstone in everybody's recovery program. But if I have a sense of gratitude, that's a lot different than a sense of entitlement.
Yep. Yep. Healthy perspective to live your life because you're focusing on the things you have rather than the things you don't have.
Brother, I mean, at my age, I do this every morning when I get up.
Yep.
You know what that is? That's to make sure I didn't have a stroke
right
in my sleep and my parietal lobe is done.
And you gotta test your phalanges.
Yeah. And I hit the ground and like, whew, thank God I'm able to live another day. Yep. No kidding. I didn't think that when I was your age or younger. I looked, it's just another day. The sun rose because of me. Let's explode today. Let's win.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on this one. Man. I'm grateful that I'm in that place where I get that. I'm with you.
I'm grateful to be on this show. I'm grateful to know you. I'm grateful to, you know, LA Talk Radio. I'm grateful to people that have been whatever. There's just a lot of gratitude that I feel now. And it just it takes you into a more selfless position if I'm just grateful for what's been the blessings that have been bestowed, I guess, or that I'm able to participate in. And so, man, it was never like, I mean, trust me, I was the poster child for the opposite. So, so now, you know, just showing and teaching people gratitude, I think is going to be a big thing for us. And if we don't teach it to them, we'll help them improve their sense of gratitude.
I can dig it.
Oh, man. You will improve. We're going to set a goal and you're going to improve it. I'm going to hold you accountable and responsible. So, you know, people might not want to come visit us at our program after today, but you know what? You'll be a better person, man. And we'll take a look at core foundational elements. And we're not just going to do fluff and subjectiveness. We're going to talk about some morals, values, beliefs, and the things that make those up, every component part of that. And so that's just so thrilling about that. And can't wait to do it. Well, we're over time. We're 1 minute over time. Well, thanks for everybody for listening and watching the Concierge Coaches Show here today on LA Talk Radio. Come back next week. We will follow up, God willing, on our attitude. Thank you. On our attitude exercise. Come check us out on social media. We're on the Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Our shows are archived on latalkradio.com. You find our show, and we have every show we've ever done all the way back since 2016 on the show that you can download yourself, and you can keep a copy for free, F-R-E-E. You ain't paying Nathan nothing. Free. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net, and Neil will tell us about Instagram and how he can be reached.
ElevatedLifestyleAcademy.com and the same name on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay. So that's a wrap. We'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Stay safe. See you then.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.